Hi there, I want to welcome you to the first Frugal Crafter podcast. I am your hostess, Lindsay Weirich, the Frugal Crafter, and today we are going to answer some of the questions that have come in from blog readers over the last week. This is episode one of the Frugal Crafters podcast entitled Ask a Crafter. If you would like to leave a comment on today's show, or if you have any questions to ask me for next week's show, you can contact me by either leaving a comment on my blog, thefrugalcrafter.wordpress.com, or you can email me at craftypodcast@yahoo.com. Next week, we'll be talking about homemade gifts for the holidays. So if you have any questions or ideas pertaining to that, be sure to drop me a line. I'll have a guest or two in the studio too next week, so it's going to be a lot of fun. The first question this week comes from Louise. I purchased grunge board a while back. My slice does not cut into it for designs. I just don't have a clue as to what else I can do with it. Secondly, I purchased the Tim Holtz crackle paint, and no matter what I do, even with a thick coat, it does not crackle. I thinned it a bit with water, and still no luck. I just feel like I have wasted my money. I also purchased Fantastics by Sukuniko. They are just wasting away in my drawer. Help! Okay, don't worry, Louise. You have not wasted your money. I'll explain how to use these products, so hopefully you can get a little bit more use and have a little more fun with them. First of all, the grunge board. That is a really thick, chipboard-like, flexible product, and it's really not designed to be cut with the slice or really any electronic die cutter. Even with the deep cut blades, I've had people complain to me that they can't cut through it with their Cricuts. So I think you just kind of have the wrong tool for the job. What I would do is I would use a manual die cutter if you have one, like a Big Shot or a Sizzix machine. Pressure dies will be able to cut through that thicker material. If you don't have one, you might ask a friend if they have a Big Shot or a Cuddle Bug, and you want the thick dies. The thin dies are not going to cut through it, but the thick ones will. Still, if that doesn't work, one thing you can try with your slice is for those of you who don't know, a slice is a small die cutting machine. It's about 5 inches by 5 inches. You set it on top of your paper, and there's like a blade in the center that will cut small designs. It's perfect for card makers and scrapbookers, but it doesn't cut through really thick stuff. But I think if you'd set that on your grunge board and you cut a simple shape, maybe cut it a couple times without moving your slice, you may be able to cut through it enough that you can cut it the rest of the way with scissors or maybe get it to pop out. But if none of those options work, you can always try cutting them with scissors, or you can go to your local scrapbook store if you have one. They are likely to have a machine called an AccuCut, and that is a big commercial grade die cutting machine. And usually if you purchase things at your local scrapbook store, they'll use the machine for free, or maybe they'll just charge you a small amount for you to be able to bring in your own grunge board and cut it. So I would give that a try. And if all else fails, you can also emboss it with an embossing folder. You could use it for a book cover. There's a lot of things you can do with grunge board. And if you search for YouTube videos, you'll find even more ideas. Secondly, you were talking about the Tim Holtz crackle paint. And I think what may be happening here is that you might be expecting it to do something that it just doesn't do. The Tim Holtz crackle paint is a one-step crackle paint, meaning you paint on a thick coat of it and then let it dry. And as it dries, the kind of chunks of paint kind of pull away from each other and give you a crackling appearance. It's not as bold as other types of crackle paint. And I'll tell you why. A one-step crackle paint is only going to be so dramatic. That's what the Tim Holtz paint is. What I like to do when I want a crackle finish is I use a crackle medium. And a crackle medium is a clear acrylic paint or acrylic medium that you can use with whatever acrylic paints you have. So to use it, like say I want to crackle finish a frame, I would paint a frame with cream acrylic paint. And then I would let that dry, and then I would paint a coat of crackle medium on top. And that's kind of a thick, clear paint that dries very slowly. I would let it sit for a couple minutes, and then I would brush on another coat of acrylic paint. And that top coat that's over the crackle paint, as it dries, will crackle. If you paint the acrylic paint on top of the crackle medium soon after you apply the medium, it'll give you bigger, more bolder cracks. If you let the crackle medium dry a little bit before you put on your top coat of acrylic paint, you'll get subtle, smaller cracks. So I really like using the crackle medium because I can use it with all of the acrylic paint I already have on hand, so it's less expensive and I can get exactly the effect that I want. The benefits to the Tim Holtz paint is that it's one step, less time waiting for it to dry, but it is a completely different look. It's much more subtle. So if you're not seeing any crackling with your paint, which it kind of sounds like that also might be the case, your paint could be faulty. If it has frozen, if you had stored it in a garage and it had a chance to freeze over the winter, or if you left it in your car overnight after you bought it and it froze, that could make the paint thick and kind of chunky. If it's chunky at all, it's probably frozen, and that would make it not work properly. If you bought it and it was chunky right when you got it, it probably froze when it was delivered to the store. So in that case, you could bring it back to the store and ask for an exchange. You said you thinned it down a little bit. What I would do first is I would get a piece of cardstock and I would paint what you consider a thick coat, then what you consider a medium coat, and what you consider a thin coat, and let it completely dry and look and see if any of those swatches of paint have crackled. If not, it could be because you thinned it maybe. And in that case, I would set the jar of paint like on a shelf and leave it alone for a few days, and then unscrew the cap, and if you can see a little bit like a film of water on top, I would try to pour that off. If you don't see a film of water, you can leave the cap off for a couple hours and try to let it dry out a little bit. You don't want it to create a skim of paint on the top, but you do want to take out some of the excess moisture. Hopefully that helped you. I hope that you can get some use out of that paint. If not, you could always just use it as paint, I guess. And your last question about the Fantastics by Sukuniko, and I hope I'm pronouncing that right, those are little blending pens or blending sticks. They have a plastic barrel and they've got a tip that you can dip into blending medium or right onto chalk or ink and color like that. What I like to do with the blending pens is, okay, first of all, the easiest way you can use them. The easiest thing to do would be to just press it up against a stamp pad, or you could press a clear block onto your dye-based stamp pad so you get like a little puddle of color. And then take the Fantastic, take the tip of that, and just kind of pick up all the color you can. And then you would probably have a stamped image you wanted to color, I imagine. Go over to your stamped image and start coloring in little circles, starting at the edge of your stamped image and bringing the color inward so it kind of fades out as it gets in the middle. That's one of the easiest ways. Next thing you could do with a dry Fantastic, you could just wipe it across a stick of chalk pastel or into a cake of decorator's chalk, and you can just simply use that to color an image as well. Just rub your chalk on your image. Now I'm going to tell you my favorite ways to use blending pens, and the first, I would like you to like squeeze out a little bit of either clear embossing ink or vegetable glycerin, and you're going to dunk your Fantastic in there. Kind of leave it in the solution a little bit so it will soak up that glycerin. Glycerin is available at a health food store, and you'll find that it's very useful in your stamping life if you're a stamper, because you can condition your stamps with it. It works the same as clear embossing and watermark ink. It's fabulous. And so anyways, you have Fantastic and you have it dipped in clear ink. Then go to your chalk pastels and pick up some of the chalk with that. And then start coloring your image, and you'll notice that the glycerin will lock down the pigment onto your paper, and it will also make your blending tool glide smoothly over the paper, rather than if you just dipped it in water and then picked up the chalk, your paper would kind of pill up a little bit. It would damage the surface, but the glycerin lubricates the surface of your paper and lets your ink or your chalk or whatever glide across, so it's really handy for that. Another thing you can do with the glycerin on that Fantastic is you could color your image with watercolor pencils and then use the Fantastic that's been dipped in glycerin to liquefy them and be able to paint with them, and you'll get a very smooth look, much smoother than if you just used water. Another idea would be to use regular colored pencils to color your image and then dip the Fantastic in either odorless mineral spirit, baby oil, or my favorite, Goo Gone. Now, odorless mineral spirits are very popular, but they are toxic. Just so you know, they don't smell, they're not as toxic as like turpentine, but if you do use odorless mineral spirits, make sure you have a window open or you're going to end up with a headache. I like Goo Gone because it doesn't give me a headache and it smells nice and it really liquefies the pencil really well. And many people have told me that baby oil works just as well, but you do the same thing. You dip your Fantastic in the Goo Gone or the baby oil or whatever, get it saturated, and then you just go over the colored pencil and it kind of turns it into paint. And you know, it actually looks a lot like the Copic marker coloring that's so popular right now. So you can get the look of the Copic markers, and really, for just the price of your Fantastics and a little bit of Goo Gone. So that works really well. I hope that these products now are going to get some use in your craft room, and I hope you leave a comment and let us know how it all turned out for you. Thanks for the question. Okay, the next question comes from Lori. Hi, Lindsay. I read this post, and she's referring to the bookbinding video that I posted a week ago Thursday. It's on my blog, The Frugal Crafter. I've read this post and wound up watching almost all your videos this last week. Thank you. Wow, you are amazing. I want to find out if you have used your new binding machine and if you still like it. I have the site up online to buy it, but I'm torn between buying a Zutter Bind It All and the one you got. A couple of questions. One, does it only do wires, combs, or both? And two, does it take up a lot of space? Is it large? I would really appreciate any input you can give me on this machine, and thank you in advance for your help. All right. Well, the video that Lori is talking about was a little how-to video I made about a week ago using an office supply binding machine instead of one of the pricier scrapbooking binding machines. And they each have their own advantage. The advantage to the office supply binding machine, and it was a Combine 75 that I purchased from mybinding.com, is that it punches a full sheet of paper. It'll punch like 11 and 3/4 inches wide. So that's really handy for me because I tend to do like recipe books and scrapbooks and calendars, and I need that like long punch. And I can punch 10 sheets of text paper or 3 sheets of cardstock at a time, so I can get through my projects very quickly. The combs for the machine are inexpensive. They're about 2 to 20 cents a piece for an 11-inch length. And I've even found them at the dollar store, so, you know, they're very inexpensive. And you can get just about any color you want. Those you have to order online. You can go to Staples and find, like, black and white, but if you want the fancy colors, you have to get those online. And it's easy, it's quick, and it has some suction cup feet on it so that when you go to punch, it actually sucks it down to the table so it's not wiggling around, so you don't have to have both hands on the machine when you're using it, which is really handy. And the best part is it costs $20. The downside of the Combine 75 is that it takes up more space than a bind at all. It takes up about 14 inches wide by about 8 or 9 inches maybe. So it's going to take up a considerable space on your desk, or you can store it in the box it comes in. So that's not too bad. Whereas a bind at all takes up a much smaller space. You're limited to the comb binding. It doesn't do the wires. It's designed to put the comb bindings in. Well, that's about it. That's about it for the cons. As far as the Zutter Bind It All, the benefits to the Zutter Bind It All, it's small. It's about 5 inches by 6 inches, and you could take it with you to a crop if you wanted to. You can store it on a shelf. It's very tiny. It's very sturdy, but it doesn't have the suction cup feet, so you do need to hold it down while you're punching, and it has very cute little wires that it uses. And somebody emailed me a tip saying that you can actually search for the wires for the Bind It All. I think they're called 2-in-1 wires, and you can buy them from like eBay or Amazon for a lot cheaper. So that's, you know, a way you can save a little bit of money on that. The cons of the Zutter Bind It All is that it only punches 3 inches of worth of holes at a time, so you have to keep lining your paper up and moving it and punching it. So that would be really time consuming for me where I do the larger projects. But if you're just doing tiny mini books, that might be just the ticket for you. The machine is more expensive. It's like $75, and the wires are more expensive and harder to find. You can't just walk into Staples and buy a box if you're in the middle of a project. You have to kind of plan ahead a little bit. But there you go. There's your pros and cons. As a follow-up, Lori did email me back, because I answered her when she did email me that question, and she ended up getting the office supply style binder. So I hope she lets me know how she makes out with that. All right, I did have another question on the C75 binding machine. Barb writes, saw your video and ordered me a C75 binder. I'm going to make a calendar for digital scrapbooking. Can you please tell me what kind of paper to use? And for the covers, thank you so much, Barb. Well, Barb, what I use for paper when I'm doing my digital scrapbook calendars and whenever I'm printing my photos is I use HP Premium Photo Paper Glossy, and I get that at Sam's Club. I get 150 sheets for about $30, so it's a pretty good deal, and I only need to get a new ream of it probably, I would say, every year and a half, and I'm a pretty busy scrapbooker, so I go through quite a bit, and I find it to be very nice quality. It works really well in my printer. I do usually feed it in one sheet at a time, though, but I think that's more of a issue with my printer. And for the actual calendar grids that I print them on just any cardstock you like is fine, or cover stock. It doesn't have to be as thick as cardstock, but I would at least use a cover stock, because you have to figure, after the year is done, these scrapbook calendars are going to be saved, and they're going to be heirlooms and flipped through, because they're really beautiful albums when you've done the calendar, and plus you have all the little things written in that you've done all throughout the year, so it's really a nice thing to save. I usually just use a regular cardstock cover for the calendar, but if you wanted something a little sturdier, you could cut a piece of like a cereal box down to 8.5 inch by 11, and then you could cover that with pattern paper on either side just to kind of buffer it, and there you could have a really nice thick cover that way. I would punch each element, like I would punch the cardstock by itself, I would punch the cereal box by itself, so that way you don't overwhelm the punch inside the binding machine. So that would give you a really nice sturdy cover. You might even want to do a back cover like that, so you have a nice album after the year is done for your calendar. All right, so I think those were all your questions. Thank you so much, Barb. All right, Melody writes, do you have a tutorial to make your own glimmer mist? Why, yes, I do, and you don't even need to read my tutorial because it's so dang easy. First, you need some glimmer powder, and there's two different kinds on the market that are pretty easy to find. One being Pearl X. That's what I have because it was kind of what was around when I got mine probably, I'm guessing, about 9 years ago. And there's also Perfect Pearls by Ranger. If you're using Pearl X, you're going to need to add a binder. So basically what you want to do is go out to Target or Walmart or the dollar store and buy yourself some little spray bottles. And then you want to fill them about halfway full of water. And then you want to add a binder if you are using Pearl X. So what I use, because I have it on hand, is gum arabic. And it's a watercolor medium, and basically it's just a binder. But if you don't have that, you could actually just put in a little hairspray, and that will work just fine. And then you want to put a couple little scoops, and I think it would probably be like a 16th of a table of a teaspoon rather 16th of a teaspoon of pigment powder. And if you want to tint it, then just put in a couple drops of reinker or food coloring. Reinker will probably be a little more vivid and won't fade, so if you have reinker, use that. If not, use some food coloring. Screw the cap on. Now, you don't want to shake it vigorously. What you want to do is kind of swirl it, kind of like you're ringing a bell, kind of like if you're holding the bottle of glimmer mist, kind of like you're tracing a circle with the bottom of the bottle. So you're just kind of swirling it around in a bell-shaped motion. Because sometimes when you shake it, you get the little pigment particles jammed up in the top of the nozzle, and then it doesn't spray so well. So there you go, there's glimmer mist. Now, it's even easier if you're using Perfect Pearls by Ranger, because they have the binder, so all you need to do is get your little bottle of water, add a little bit of the Perfect Pearls, give it a swirl, and then spray, and you're good to go. Some spray bottles work better than others. I found the ones at Walmart work pretty well. They also have those little mini misters by Ranger. I bet those would be great because that way you don't have to mix up too much. But just don't put too much pigment in there. You really need way less than you think, because if you have too much in there, it's going to clog. And just remember to swirl it up before you use it each time. There you go. Go make some glimmer mist. Okay, the next question is from Christina. She writes, hello, I love to make my own cards with my Cricut Expression machine, but I just can't figure out how to cut envelopes to fit all my cards. Do you have any tips or websites that I can log on to that will help me with this? Well, yes, Christina, I do. The first question I would ask you would be, do you have any software for your Cricut machine? My favorite, I have a Cricut Expression as well. I use Shortcuts a Lot software, and that's how I make most of my envelopes. And I also design some SVG envelopes that if you do have Shortcuts a Lot or Make the Cut or Fairy Cut software, you can purchase a kit and you can cut them right with your Cricut machine. And if you're interested in that, you can go to mygraphico.com and search Envelope Bonanza. That's the name of that envelope SVG set. But if you don't, you can make your own very easily. So if you don't have Shortcuts a Lot or you don't have Make the Cut, you can still do this in Cricut Design Studio. And since you have a Cricut Expression, you can cut with the cartridges Accent Essentials and Plant and School Book for free. So what you want to do, if you don't have that software, is download it and install it on your computer, and you'll need to hook your computer to your Cricut with a printer cable. It's called a USB cord. It's an AB style USB cord. If you don't have one, that's what you need. All right, when you open up the software, you're going to see a grid that looks just like your Cricut mat, and you're going to see a keypad that has all the different shapes that are available on whatever cartridge you're choosing. Of course, without buying the software, you're only going to be able to use Accent Essentials and Plant School Book. And if you want to cut with any of the other cartridges after you buy the software, you have to own them and have them plugged into your machine at the time to do so. So it's a little bit of a hassle, but you'll see that it can be quite useful. So basically, to make an envelope, you need to select a rectangle and drag it the width and the length you want it. So if it's a 4x6 card, you want it about 6 1/4 inches wide, and then you want it to have it about 9 inches tall. And then you want a second rectangle, and you want that to be about 4 1/4 inches high by about 8 inches wide, and you want to center that and lay it right on top of your first rectangle. Select both of them and click Weld. Make sure the Weld box is checked. And then if you click Preview, it's the little button that looks like an eyeball, you'll see that you have what looks like a cross, pretty much. It'll be kind of like a tall rectangle with a couple little you know, rectangle pieces sticking out on each side. If you cut that and you fold over the sticky outy parts, you'll have an envelope. I will link to a tutorial because I know that's really hard to understand just by hearing it, so I will have a tutorial that you can look at and see exactly how to do that. So if you don't have a if you don't want to use a computer with your Cricut Expression, that's fine. On several cartridges, they have envelopes. So what you want to do, if it's like Wildcard cartridge, you could cut your card and then without changing your dial size, and you have to make sure that the real dial size button is not pressed. You want to load in a fresh piece of paper and then select the envelope. Now, as long as the card isn't too big, the envelope should cut right to size. If it's too big, it's going to beep at you and say size too large. So that's the nice thing about the cartridges. They design them so if you everything is to scale with everything else on the cartridge. So if you're cutting like a little owl card and you've cut it like 4 inches wide, or you have your little dial set to 4 when you cut it, when you cut the envelope, as long as you don't change your dial and as long as the real dial button is not pressed, you should be cutting the envelope to scale. Something else you might want to try, I think on Plant and School Book there are some envelopes. You could actually cut a bunch, change your dial size each time, like cut it at 1 inch, cut it at 2 inches, cut it at 3 inches, and then write the size that you cut it on each of the envelopes as it comes out of the machine. So then when you need an envelope for a card, you can just match it up to the envelope that fits and you'll know exactly what size to cut it at. So that's the non-computer solution if you want to go that way. So either way, you will have cards envelopes to fit your cards. Another really easy way to make an envelope is just to like cut a piece of scrapbook paper. Say if you're making a 5x7 card, cut a piece of scrapbook paper to about 10x10. Now you want to lay that scrapbook paper down on the table so it looks like a diamond, so kind of the point is facing away from you. And then lay your card on top of it so that it's perpendicular, so it's flat where the points are coming out at each corner, at each side rather. Then fold in the two side points, fold at the bottom and fold down the top, and you'll have a little envelope that way. It's not fancy, but it certainly will work. Thanks so much for that question, Christina. That's a really good one. All right, lastly, we have Sandy with a question about glue. Hi, Lindsay. I've been scrapbooking for 4 years, but I have yet to find a glue that I am really happy with. I like to use ribbon and buttons on my pages, but most of the glues I've tried either seep through my ribbon, wrinkle my paper, or aren't thick enough to grab my embellishments. Help! Also, I like to adhere small die cuts like letters to my page, and I need a glue with a fine tip. What do you suggest? Well, Sandy, I suggest a couple different glues. For die cuts, like small letters and paper piecing, my favorite glue is the Tombow Mono Adhesive. And there's a couple out there, but the one I like is in a clear bottle, and it's got a blue cap on it. And actually, it has two ends, so if you're in your scrapbook store, it's usually sitting on a shelf on its end. And the bottom end has a wide applicator, and the top end has a really fine tip applicator. And I really like this because it doesn't seem to clog, but it's also got a really fine tip that you can put on the back of those teeny little letters as you're gluing them down to your scrapbook page. And it's clear glue, so you don't end up with a mess, even if a little bit does seep out. I use that for all my little die cut pieces. And I've used that glue for about 7 or 8 years, and I haven't had any problem with things coming unstuck or falling off my pages. My other recommendation would be a glue that I just started using recently, and it's by Helmar, and it's 450 adhesive, and it's kind of expensive. It's about $8 or $9 a bottle, but it's nice and thick, and it's great for ribbon because it won't seep through your ribbon, but it's also good for buttons and metal embellishments because it's thick enough that it kind of grabs the embellishment so it doesn't fall over when you're trying to glue it. If I have something kind of really bumpy and it doesn't want to sit good, I'll put a clear acrylic block, stamping block on it to hold it in place. But that glue works wonderful. And of course, hot glue always works great for ribbons and buttons and things like that too, and it's very inexpensive. So I think one of those three glues will solve your problems quite nicely. I want to thank you so much for all your questions this week. Next week, we'll be talking about homemade gifts for the holidays. So if you want to leave a comment or ask a question, you can at my blog, thefrugalcrafter.wordpress.com, or you can email me at craftypodcast@yahoo.com. Thank you so much for listening, and until next time, happy crafting!